Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Movie Mastery, the podcast where we watch the movies that you recommend to us. I am your host, John. With me, as always, is my co-host, Jeff.
Hello.
Question mark?
Yes, I am and shall continue to be Jeff.
Ah, good. It would be weird if you changed halfway through this.
Just halfway through the episode, but not weird if I changed in life.
No.
People can change their names whenever they want for
whatever
reason.
Anyone is allowed to change whenever they want.
Yeah, but not mid-show.
Not mid-show, though. If you change your name mid-show, we're done professionally.
That's communism. It's super woke to change your name mid-show.
So woke. The episode this time around, in a wonderful continuation of our triumphant return to theaters with last episode's review of Madam Web, we got a lot of people asking us to do Morbius.
Obviously, we needed to make it Morbin time.
So
after we made it Madam in time.
Madam in time.
Wait, Madam Mim time? I'm way into Madam Mim time.
Oh, we're going into Madam Mim time.
God, I hope. I don't want to bring that. I don't want to put that evil on the world, because you know that's going to turn into like a 10 episode prequel series.
Oh yeah, I was going to be like, coming soon to Disney Plus, Madam Mim, and she's a sexy goth chick.
Rhea Seahorn is Madam Mim in an extremely examined life.
Oh, we're going to see the background that turned Madam Mim into the mad woman she is.
Yeah, no.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. I was wrong. I don't want that.
Oops, I fucked up. Hold on. Somebody get this monkey's paw away from me.
Amy Schumer is.
Oh, God. Well, it's been good, but I'm out. So we watched 2022's Morbius?
Oh, it feels like so timeless. You know, it feels like it's always been there. Morbin around.
The weird thing is, this is a movie that fully finished filming in 2019.
Uh-huh.
And then something happened in 2020 and they didn't release it. And I can't help but look at like, oh, they kept this shit like on the back burner, really working the like angles to try and get this a good premiere for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had just gone, hey, everybody, you can just watch Morbius for free on streaming, I guarantee that this would have been way better financially for them.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things about Sony is that they don't really have their own streaming platform at the moment. They're one of the few studios that doesn't right now.
Yeah.
So they have to make deals with people, which is why all their
shit is on Disney+.
It's showing up on Disney Plus now, but it wasn't for a long time. When Disney Plus launched, all the Spider-Man shit was over on Netflix, and everything was all squirreled around, so they didn't really have a spot to hide this garbage.
No. I mean,
but you know, the thing that happened in 2020 that was obviously the pandemic, the thing that should have happened in 2020 was everyone realizing that you shouldn't make movies that star Jared Leto anymore.
Yeah.
If you want to kill a franchise, put Jared Leto in that bitch. It ruined Tron. It ruined Blade Runner.
It is amazing how many beloved franchises this motherfucker has come into and been like, hey, Let me get my stink on that.
Yeah.
And then just...
Hey, guys, can you give me some sort of Photoshop filter to make my eyes look young? Because it's not working on the rest of me anymore. I'm like 56 fucking years old, and I'm still playing the 30-something in these.
Oh, God. I loved when this started, and they were like 25 years ago, and I went, bullshit.
Yeah,
no.
Exactly. Yeah, 25 years ago, he was 5 or 10 or whatever. No.
Nah.
25 years ago, he was turning his band into a cult still.
Ah. Oh, man. It's wild. It is a movie that, of course, got a lot of memes for it, a lot of ridiculous nonsense, such that, you know, the studio re-released it.
Yeah.
And that failed again.
All the memes, and people were like, oh, it's because we're huge fans of it. You don't understand.
It's because... We all make fun of it, but now it's a cult classic. You should release it.
Yeah.
And they did, and no one watched it. And then they started a petition to re-release it under the heading of, we were all busy that weekend.
Yes.
So it has had quite the meme release.
And if you're asking me, which you should be, because obviously I'm a famous Hollywood consultant.
Obviously.
Really, at this point, I think Madame Web requires the exact same treatment, which is that we should get them to re-release Morbius.
Uh-huh. It's, honestly, at this point, if they leaned hard into it and just once a year re-released Morbius into theaters, I would be like, you know what? That really went a long way towards me forgiving you for being shit.
Yeah, just make it like February 11th and make the 11 look like fangs, you know, like that. Like, and then just call that, just say, you fuckers wanted Morbin time. Morbin time is February 11th.
Welcome to your annual Morb time.
Yeah.
The Morbing is now mandatory.
Morbing will continue until Morbal improves.
Oh, now, before we get into the full spoiler review of Morbius, I will say, as people obviously were inviting the comparison between this and Madame Web, I will say, this is a better movie than Madame Web with a worse ending.
I would say it's a better movie, worse ending, less entertaining. I had a bat shittier time enduring Madame Web.
I mean, I was angrier during Madame Web, so I suppose I was more engaged.
Yeah, exactly. It's got a higher engagement factor. And in this movie, he just gets in boring-looking vampire fights. He doesn't constantly hit his opponent with a car.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that's just a waste of opportunity.
Until the last 15 minutes of this movie, where it just takes a giant shit all over everything, Morbius is pretty much a incredibly mediocre, like, superhero film.
It's a mediocre vampire film. If this didn't have Marvel shit all over it, it could have come out in 1998, and it would not have shocked me in the slightest.
No. Given that they've been trying to put Morbius in a film since 1998.
Yeah, but I mean, like, literally, it looks like it was made in 1998. They have some special feature, they have special effects they use to make it look like he's moving super fast or whatever, where they give him some smoke effects, and sometimes they're cool, and sometimes they look like trash.
Yeah. It's especially bad, again, in the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
The last 15 minutes of Morbius is so bad that it drags what, before that, I was like, all right, this is like a very, you know, middle of the road, mediocre, I don't really care about it, like superhero vampire film. And then the last 15 minutes were just like, hey man, what if this was just the worst?
Yeah, this is like identical in my mind to watching I, Frankenstein.
Where
you're like, this mythology is stupid. But, oh goodness, he has a dark mirror. I hope the last 15 minutes is a bunch of shitty CGI. Oh, it is.
Oh, good. Oh,
we're trying to build a whole complex mythology on nothing, just sticks and bones. Nope, too bad. Except the one thing I will give this one over I, Frankenstein was that occasionally we'd get close-up shots of the Daily Bugle, and then each time you could freeze frame it and read things like The Chameleon's Big Escape or Black Cat, Threat or Menace across the top of the page. And you're like, yay, they're referencing other Spider-Man things.
Oh, look
at those.
Look, this is a universe that has every piece of the Spider-Man except for Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. So we... you know, don't recommend Morbius, but, you know, do what you gotta do.
Yeah. Don't be a hero. Watch Morbius. If the building's on fire, you know, just sit down and watch Morbius. Don't try and rescue people or whatever.
That's a weird take.
Uh-huh.
We are going to play a little music. We are going to come back, and then we are going to discuss all of the many fine and intricate details that make up the film Morbius.
Ah! After 10,000 years, I'm free! It's time to conquer Earth!
Alpha, Readers Escape! Recruit a team of teenagers with attitudes!
We are back, and it is time to talk about Morbius.
Yeah. So it obviously starts the way you'd expect. Like his father dies researching bats in the Amazon.
What?
that's a reference to Madame Web.
Ah,
you see, the famous line from the. See, I don't know how familiar you were with the Madame Web trailer, where
you see
where she says that line. She's like, "That's right, where my mother died." Right as she was researching spiders in the Amazon.
Uh huh.
And you know,
I mean, the fact that this starts in like Costa Rica.
I know, it does.
There are bats. And I was like, oh, look at this being exactly fucking Madam Web.
I'm really hoping that we get the exact same shit from Kraven when that
happens. Yeah, it's just lions. Also in jungle the
jungle. Animals. He's just like, I've set up a machine that'll attract jungle animals to right here. And then a dude with like a South American or a Latino accent of any sort, he's like, no, I don't want to be here. You're a crazy person. He's like, I am a crazy person. I am Kraven.
I am crazy for lions. Like, I want it to be, because we had both Madam Web and Morbius, we're like, oh, somewhere in South America, in like the Amazon, there's an animal and it'll give you superpowers.
Yeah.
I really want it to be like, I'm stalking the lions of South America. And someone be like, what?
What? Well, some of them escaped from Brazilian zoos.
They're out here and they've bred. There's over a dozen.
Oh, excuse me. Are there also rhinos here? Because I'm really interested in that.
Yeah, a couple of those got out. It was fucked up.
Sure. Great.
Whatever.
Also, there's chameleons.
And black cats. All right, everybody out.
Get the fuck out. Are there any goblins? There had best be goblins.
No. No.
I need to be bitten by a goblin. It's my origin story.
Bitten by a radioactive goblin, as my parents were murdered.
How else will I become the Spider-Man villain, Smythe?
Oh, so this movie has a present-day start and then into a flashback. So our present-day start is Jared Leto gets a helicopter ride to the cave mouth
of the most dangerous vampire bats in history.
That are, I believe this film has confused vampire bats with piranhas.
Yes, and it's also confused regular piranhas with film piranhas.
Yes.
Because they're like, oh, these things weigh effectively nothing. They're like 10 grams each, but look, they can skeletonize a cow in 2 minutes. So you're like, no, they are so specifically trained not or designed not to do that, that the thing you're saying makes no sense whatsoever. They drink blood. In fact, you yourself will make the point that they exclusively live entirely off of blood, which is correct. And then earlier in the film, you'll be like, and look at this cow skeleton. Vampire bats done got it. You're like, no.
What?
No, but no, it maybe it exsanguinated that, but something else came along and ate all the meat, right?
Yeah.
Right?
It is so wild that he's just like, oh, yeah, these bats will go out and then just absolutely murder everything. And I'm like, that's not remotely how that works.
No, vampire bats are so very carefully and evolutionarily engineered that their spit is a topical anesthetic so that they can drink a little bit in a coagulant so that when they drink blood from cows, the cows don't notice and then they stop bleeding.
Yeah. Where this film is like, oh, and their saliva is an anticoagulant.
Yeah.
And you're like, cool, good, love this.
I mean, maybe it is. Maybe I'm wrong about vampire bats and they are actually anticoagulant for spit, but they're so not especially dangerous to the cattle populations that they feed on.
They're like, oh, I'm a bat. I'm going to have like some sips of your blood such that you would never notice. And you don't see like, oh, here's a cow with 100 bats on it.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
I think people will routinely overestimate what bats weigh. Where they point out that they're one of the lightest animals, and you're like, yeah, but I don't think you understand how light. They weigh like 2 quarters. Like, you can hold 2 quarters, and that's about what a bat weighs. And how much blood do you think that thing's going to drink? Keep in mind, it will still need to be able to fly away.
Yeah. It can't just be like, oh, I'm so fat.
I had enough blood. I weigh 4 pounds now.
I gotta crawl my way back to the cave.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But everyone's scared of these. These must be special movie bats because they're scared of them.
Yeah. It is great, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
No
one mentions rabies in this movie either. They are genuinely afraid of having their entire body eaten by bats.
Yes. And of course, the people who drop him off at the mouth of a bat cave are like, oh, and we've got to go, because obviously, if we're here after dark, these bats will come out and consume us.
Now pay us our money and we'll leave. And he's like, fine, whatever, just give me that knife you have, so he can cut his hand open to try and trap lots of bats.
Because bats, you know, much like sharks, can smell blood from miles away.
Yeah, and they do. We see him slicing his hand way open for no good reason, given how sickly he is, because obviously the whole point of this is that he has some sort of degenerative blood disease. So he slices his hand open. You know that's not going to heal right. To use it as a bait for like a complicated net trap he's designed.
Which is weird because it just sort of looks like, oh, I've got some like fishing wire that is in between some slats and, like, not even a lot, like 10 pieces of fishing line. And when he does this and the bats fly at him, they just go right through it. It does not stop them or capture
them. None of them seem to be getting stuck on this thing. So we have no idea. A regular net probably would have been more useful.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, there's a shot of him cutting his hand and then a bunch of, like, evil looking bats going, huh? Blood?
Oh, blood. Hey.
Blood? And you're like, that's, you know, they specifically feed from not currently bleeding animals. Like, that's the whole, like, they don't have to wait until a cow gets a boo-boo.
Yeah. It is amazing. I love this shit. So he just summons bats that fly through his dumb, like, lines of fishing wire that do nothing.
Right. And then they almost didn't kill the helicopter. I can't tell.
Well, like, all of the guys go, oh shit, let's get to the helicopter. Get in there. And we see that all of these bats are, like, slamming into this helicopter and also circling around him. And we have established that these bats are movie piranhas and they do nothing to him.
Yeah, they don't do anything to him, probably because they recognize him as a kindred spirit or whatever. But it's almost like it looks like they're going to bring down the helicopter by just gumming up the rotors.
Yeah.
But they can't possibly do that because this guy, there's no way he would make it off, like, the 10 feet away from this cliff, let alone down from it a bunch of bats.
We established that he's like, oh, 3 times a day I need to, like, fully get my blood drawn out and replaced.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think he's like, all right, well, gentlemen, with my only way off of this ledge in the middle of the Amazon, here you go. You may leave me here. No, then you are dead.
Yeah, there's no information given as to how he's supposed to have gotten down from here. And the bats he gets, he doesn't even need them. He just needed, like, one so he could get some of the blood from them. The rest of the movie, they're just in a big display case.
Yeah, I mean, I assume he needs several because he is doing a bunch of tests.
That's true. He is doing a lot of tests. So he might need several bats for his tests, but they're going to spend the rest of the movie in this, like, display case thing. And again, it's like he just needed some bats. He didn't need to go get them himself.
No, he needed vampire bats, but he also needed a giant 2-story cylinder for these bats in his office, which, who built that?
I do like
what was that there for?
At one point, someone asks him what it's there and for, and he says, oh, that's like a fish tank, but for bats.
Yeah.
Which is like, yeah, no, I understand the concept.
No, I get why you have it. How do you have it?
He's like, no, I don't think you understand. You know how birds sometimes live in cages? This is like that, but for bats. But it's a fish tank for bats.
This is a hospital. Who built you this?
Who gave you a 20-foot-high cylinder for bat storage?
Like, who came in and you were like, I need a giant glass cylinder? And they're like, for what? You know, stuff.
It's probably like Wilson Fisk. He was just like, oh, you know, every year I put up a couple million for the evil sciences.
I mean, we do basically get that with no explanation in a character that we will be introduced to in a flashback now.
Yeah. So we go to the flashback after he gets the bat blood. And yeah, he just had this degenerative blood disease from a young age. He's at a special hospital for kids who have problems like him.
In Greece for some reason?
Yeah, no explanation for that, given that he's American and the kid he gets introduced to is British.
Yeah, but I guess whoever, the doctor who is taking care of him, who is also not Greek, is like, oh, well, I guess I live here and I'm the person who knows anything about this disease, because it's rare enough that you're like, oh, well, anybody who gets this is gonna die except for these two.
Yeah, I assume that's the third billed actor of the movie, Jared Harris from, like, Mad Men and stuff.
Yeah,
as the doctor. But he gets introduced, he's a young boy, he's being introduced to his new roommate who has the exact same blood disease he does, and it's affecting him in the exact same way, where he has to use 2 crutches to walk. And he calls him Milo, and the kid's like, my name's not Milo. And he goes, I don't care. Every kid who has that bet is Milo. I forget who the original Milo was, but he was Milo, and then the kid after him was Milo.
I'm not Milo. That was the kid who was here before. He's like, no, it's every kid who's here.
Yeah.
Because you aren't going to last. I get a bunch of roommates, and they all die.
Yeah, I live, and they die. And, you know, the funny thing about it is I feel like they gave him this affectation and had him be called Milo throughout the rest of the movie because this character's real name is Lucian Cross, which is too much like a Blade thing to exist in this world. So they were like, that's stupid. We can't do that.
Well, he is a god. There is a character that he is an amalgamation of, like, 5 different characters is Lucian. And one of them is Lotius Crown.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, no, let's call him Milo. We can't.
Like, the names of some of the Morbius villains. Well, there's Abatuaricus Vampirello. Should we do that one?
I mean, Lucius Crown is Hunger is his name.
I thought it was Lucian Cross, but it might be Lucian Crown.
I don't know that we ever find out his last name. I'm pretty sure all we get is Lucian and Milo, and that's it.
Oh, it's Lucian Crown. So Cross, yeah, you're right. It was just because they didn't say it in the movie, but it's supposed to be Lucian Crown. But they're just going by Milo because, again, Lucian Crown sounds like he's from a Manan Rice novel. It's like too vampire-y even for a movie that stars a man whose real name is Michael Morbius, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, the second he shows up, he's like, and my name, I'm British and my name is Lucian Crown. You're like, vampire, that dude's going to be a vampire.
Also, I'm the Duke of Glastonbury.
Okay, well, yeah, great. Pile it on.
We're supposed to take you seriously as a country again, right?
What? But yeah, we get the two of these kids, Milo and Morbius, and they are the best of friends because they have the same disease.
They're the onlyest of friends because their life situation is pretty impactful. There's also no evidence given to what Morbius's living or home situation is other than his blood disease. We don't even get a mention of whether or not he has parents.
No.
There's just nothing.
Fully don't matter or exist, and neither do Milo's. Like, he mentions that he has parents and they sent him here.
We know he's astonishingly wealthy,
but we don't know why or how.
Yeah, it could be for, he could be post being here, and it could be he was born wealthy. We just don't know.
No, there's literally nothing. This movie just goes, Milo is super rich. Okay, how? That doesn't matter.
According to the movie wiki that I have open now, he was just born wealthy. Like, he was born to a wealthy family.
Okay.
So there you go. That explains why he has so much fuck you money. But yeah, the two of them are friends. A little bit, but this flashback's pretty quick. We don't get a lot of time to focus on them. Eventually, there's a chance for Morbius to go to a special school for the gifted because he's super smart. He helps rescue Milo when his blood-changing machine breaks. He opens it up and fixes it, and they're like, wow, you're a mechanical genius. You need to go to this special school in New York for mechanical geniuses.
Except it's, wow, you're a mechanical genius. You need to go to New York to be a doctor. Wait, what?
Yeah, well, I mean, they sent him there to school for mechanical geniuses, and he was like, yeah, but I want to be a doctor, though. Because he's obsessed with curing his own disease.
Yes.
So he was definitely...
this is a school for mechanical geniuses. It's just, this is a school for gifted youngsters.
It's a school for gifted... Yeah, they sent him to the Grey Malkin Academy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then they're like, you're not a mutant. You just have a rare blood mutate.
Oh, fuck. Okay, hold on. We gotta change up our ads.
Yeah, we can't. We gotta change the you have to be a mutant with cool powers or at least a bird, a chicken face.
You have to be a mutant with something cool.
Yeah, or at the very least a chicken face and body.
At the very least. You gotta literally be the very least.
Barnell Bohusk or better. But yeah, like... So that we skip ahead to he leaves a letter in his signature style of folding origami, which, again, this guy already rooted Blade Runner. We don't need to be reminded of that. Milo, and Milo opens a letter, wind blows it outside, and then he gets half kicked to death by local Grecian street punks who talk with British accents anyway.
Oh, yeah. I was like, wait, what the fuck?
Why did they pretend this is in Greece?
Why did they say this was in Greece? None of this matters if it's in Greece or fucking England or anywhere else.
Except that all the kids are dressed like they go to fucking British private school, and they're all like, oi, you! I'm Grecian, oi, is! I'm gonna kick your head in!
But that entire scene basically exists to go, we need... Because we're not gonna spend any time on Milo at all until, like, the back half of this film... So, here's a point where he, like, gets real angry at some kids who, admittedly, took a letter that he lost, made fun of him, and then, like, pushed and fucked with a crippled kid.
They were kicking him. They were kicking him around.
And then it's after he takes his crutch and whacks one of them in the face.
Yeah.
That they're like, oh, well, let's beat the shit out of him.
Right.
And then... After the doctor shows up and, like, gets all of them to run away, Milo jumps on top of one of them and starts punching him, and you're like, oh, he's got an anger problem.
Mm-hmm. But later on in the future, Morbius is still working on his fancy-pantsy blood diseases. He's trying to help a young girl with a problem.
Well, he turns down a Nobel Prize.
That's right. He's
for
in a Nobel Prize award ceremony where I think Jared Harris is being awarding it to him or something.
Yeah.
But then he just gets up and walks away from it.
Yeah. Well, his whole thing is he created essentially
artificial
fake
blood. Yeah.
He created blood that works exactly like normal blood, but it is blue so that it can be visually distinct.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, I'm turning down this Nobel Prize because this was just an accident. My whole thing was trying to fix my own, like, blood problem, and I just happened to create this as a byproduct of it, so fuck you, I don't want your prize. And everyone's like, why would you do that?
You know,
and I don't care.
You know, the current payout for a Nobel Prize is $1 million, right?
You could probably use that to, I don't know, fund your research or something.
And you're probably going to need to fly back out to Costa Rica for more bats at some point.
It's weird that you would do that. And also, even if you didn't mean to, like, I didn't set out to make artificial blood, it very clearly, and we get told this many times in the film, has saved so many lives.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, the fact that we can, on demand, just have blood that fully works with anyone, you don't have to worry about type, and it will just always function. They're like, oh, this saved, like, one of our main police officer.
Yeah, one of the Tyrese. We have Tyrese Gibson in this movie as one of the cops, and he goes like, hey, just before we even start talking to you about the crimes we think you committed, you saved my ass in Afghanistan with your fake blood, and I want to personally thank you for that.
Yeah, the only reason I still have my arm is because of that.
Yeah.
And we get told all the time how great this is, and he's just like, yeah, but I didn't mean to, so I don't want this reward. And I'm like, you know, like, the first thing that was given an award for was just an accident.
Yeah, well, I mean, technically the award is named for an accident. The trinitrotoluene invention named after Alfred Nobel and everything. But like, it makes him look like an asshole.
Yeah.
Because he's like, oh, it was a useless invention. Useless, because it didn't save Morbiuses. It only saved non-Morbiuses.
Yeah. It is a thing that I'm like, oh, that's some great shorthand to make me not like your character.
Yeah.
You're like,
You already took a giant first leap by casting Jared Leto, and now here we are doing this as well.
Yeah, you're like, oh, well, you've got a long uphill climb.
Yeah.
And you've decided to dive, I see. Okay.
How do I climb uphill? Hand me that shovel.
So
he's hanging out with a girl, and she's like, why did you take the prize? Doesn't that have money? And he's like, ah, now you know someone who turned down a Nobel Prize. How famous am I, right? Anyway, I'm going to fix your blood problems. And then he walks out of the room, and her blood problems get worse, and he needs to put her into a coma immediately.
Yeah, we don't know if she has the same thing he does or some other issue.
Mm-hmm.
She is generically sick, and he is generically helping.
Yes.
But he has this giant fucking two-story pillar of bats in his room now.
Mm-hmm.
And is like, okay, hey, Martine, my love interest for this movie.
Martine Bancroft, because we need to put a Croft in there so you know it's got something to do with vampires.
Yeah. And he's like, hey, I'm going to try and splice the genes of bats into mine because I guess my problem with my blood has to be coagulation, because he's like, oh, their saliva has anticoagulants. And so she's like, so you're trying to splice anticoagulation into your own genes? And he's like, yeah, that's the theory.
Well, I guess my blood gets too gummy sometimes. That's my blood disease.
The blood out because it gets too thick.
Yeah.
You got that ragu blood.
So he's testing it on a mouse, and of course it dies, and he gets grumpy, and then he has to go put that girl in a coma, and then they look out the door from that room into the next room, because I guess his lab full of bats is just on the same floor as the room where they keep patients.
God bless that scene where they're like, oh no, the girl you've been treating is flatlining, let's run to do it, and they all run out of the lab, go to the place where this girl is, and then they're like, look, your rat, as they look out the door of this girl's room into where the rat is, and I'm like, did you take it with you?
What's the layout of this hospital like exactly? What's going on where the rat, your giant super secret industrial lab full of bats is across the hall from this sick girl?
Yeah. And the fact that you were like, oh, and I was doing this experiment on this rat, which is in the middle of the thing. And then they look back and it is right next to the door of this place. So I'm just like, you had to have taken a dead rat with you. You were like, you heard some kid had a problem and you grabbed your dead rat and went to go help.
And left it in a nearby available rat container.
You got there and then realized, oh, wait a minute, I don't need a dead rat to put a girl in a coma. Let me put it in the next door room. And
luckily, there's a terrarium in there, which is like a fish tank for rats.
It's not unlike.
If you're wondering what that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, yeah, I felt sorry for the lady in this. That's Adria Arjona, I think. She's like one of the main characters in Andor, and she was great in that, and here she gets nothing to do.
You can tell, at least, with both her and Matt Smith, that they're like, I can act.
Yeah.
I could, and I'm occasionally trying, and God bless them for that, but they're in Morbius.
So she's supposed to be the love interest, sort of, insofar as this movie has anything like that at all.
And it's so weird, because Michael goes to see Milo now, who has grown up and idly wealthy and just giving a ton of money to Michael, because he's like, oh, well, what else am I going to do besides fund your research to cure us?
Yes.
And
he's imported Jared Harris, the doctor, just to have him around because he's like the best doctor.
He just lives with him.
He's just like, yeah, this can come with me. He's like, but I'm a British man living in Greece and hanging around with the Grecian orphans that run the streets. That's why they have that accent.
The whole reason I'm here is to do research onto whatever your deal is. Nah, you're coming with me.
Yeah,
I own you.
You're my house doctor now.
I bought you.
Yeah. So he's like, hey, I need your help. We're getting really close. But this last experiment went wrong for some reason or another, and they're threatened, but I'm so close. So the next step is going to be illegal, so I need to do it in international waters.
Yep.
And Milo's like, yeah, obviously, no problem. I've got a cargo ship just off the coast. You could totally go there and just do your international water science experiment. Yeah, as long as it's helping me, it's helping you, right, buddy? So let's make that happen. And then we more or less establish, yeah, the two of them are friends. They go for a walk down the street in New York. It doesn't really matter. It's just establishing the two of them know each other.
Now, this also establishes in basically one, like, 30-second scene where you're like, oh, we are never going to see these two interact until the end of the film. But Milo's like, oh, and how's Martine, huh? Hey, don't fall in love with her. And you're like, oh, are you supposed to be in love with her? Because you've never interacted or will interact with her.
He's not. It was just being what passes for friendly in his mind at that moment, and then later used as an excuse to indicate that he knows who she is when he shows up to threaten her.
Thing is, the entire scene where he finally shows up is like, oh, this reads as, I've been in love with you and you should be with me.
Huh, okay. I didn't pick up that reading. I thought that was all menace. He was just being like, hey, tell me where Morbius is or I'll kill you. And then when she's like, I genuinely don't know, he's like, okay, I'll believe you. But, you know, if you see him, tell him I'm looking for him or I'll kill you. So I thought that was all just menace.
No, there is, at least for the way that I read how Matt Smith performed it, like that, his... like, sort of, once he does get his vampire powers, like, kind of stalking her and watching, it does very much feel like when he watches them kiss on a rooftop, it, visually, the way it is filmed in a, this is someone who is watching somebody kiss a person he loves.
That would have worked a lot better if they had had a scene of the two of them interacting before he had vampire powers.
That is exactly what I'm saying.
Exactly, you're right. Because without it, it reads exactly as, oh, he just knows that she's important, and that's why he's keeping tabs on her.
Yeah, the movie feels like it very much, like, visually and the way it is acted out, wants this to be like, oh, this is kind of a love triangle. Like, that's a thing we want, is them... these two vampires fighting over this lady.
Right.
Except the movie goes out of its way to never have the two of them meet until the end of the film.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting decision and a wrong one. Especially because we could totally do it here in international waters where we're cutting to now, which is the stupidest scene in this movie that is also very stupid and has flying piranhas in it. Because we go out to international waters where, for some reason, the boat just has, like, armed thugs on it that are like aggressive towards the scientist, and it's like, but this is that rich guy's boat. Who are you? Who are these fucking guys?
It's weird because you're like, oh yeah, I guess Milo decided, oh, I'm that's why I was like, dude, is he a criminal lord? Because I was like, oh, he has a boat, but it's staffed with these guys that we learn are like, oh, they're mercenaries and bad guys or whatever. You're like, okay, so then was he like, oh, this is my smuggling boat that I use for smuggling.
Yeah.
You can use it for science.
He's supposed to just be independently wealthy, and I assume he's just chartering a position for these two on a lab on a boat. Like, that's got to be it. And that he didn't say, like, oh, by the way, you're not allowed to have you know, mercenaries on the boat tonight. Like, you know, like storyline wise, there's no good reason for them to be there. Plot or mechanically, it makes perfect sense why they're there. We need bad guys that Morbius can kill when he turns into a vampire that you won't feel bad about him having killed.
Yes.
That's the only reason that they're on the boat.
But although we don't get anything background wise before they get killed. It's just like, who are these? Oh, this is the security for the boat. Oh,
yeah.
And then he gets like, he just murders all of them. And you go, okay, I've never seen them do anything bad. Literally, the only thing I've seen them do is play cards.
Well, except that one of them does get up from cards and he's like, I'm going to go check on the doctor. And you're like, that makes perfect sense if they're guards, that they would go check on the doctor. But when he goes in, Morbius is doing a test on himself and unavailable. And instead, he just is acting menacing and threatening towards Martine. Because he comes in and she's like, oh, great. Yeah, please go away. We're really busy. And he's like, I can go where I want. And she's like, yeah, but we're in the middle of a clean procedure in a room. Could you please, like, and he's like, I said, I'll go where I want. And then he starts, like, messing with shit and so on. So it's, like, obviously a menacing bad guy.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, but why, though? Why would you have this? And why would this be a thing even if he was like, yeah, Milo is a criminal, and so he's doing this to make sure that Morbius goes through with his plan to rescue the blood or solve the blood disease, you'd still be like, leave them the fuck alone.
No,
do not go in there. It would mess up the experiment.
It's the kind of thing where, again, the movie really goes out of its way in a lot of scenes and way things are structured to be like, Milo's a crime lord. Like,
yeah.
The way that he lives and dresses and talks and the things he does all feel like, oh, this guy clearly runs some sort of criminal organization. He's basically the kingpin. Except it never says that explicitly.
Uh-huh.
Never says anything about that. And it would explain why he has a ship full of, like, goons. But instead of doing that, even a bare minimum of, yeah, let's establish anything in this. They're just like, nah, whatever. There's a ship of goons. They're all on there. Fuck them. They die.
Like we were saying, mechanically, the goons are there so that Morbius has a group of chuckle fucks he can kill the moment he turns into a vampire. And that is so true that later in the movie, there are whole characters whose whole job is just to say things like, we don't care that you killed those goons. We're glad. These are cops.
Yeah. The two cops are like, well, all of those guys were mercenaries and they'd done some nasty things in their life. And, you know, it's probably for the best that they were taken out. You're still an anti-hero.
Yeah. That's poor Al Madrigal's role. Because you have Tyrese Gibson and Al Madrigal as the two cops who have to invest. Again, this is why this movie feels so much like it's from the late 90s, early 2000s, is the main character's turning into an anti-hero, and also there are two cops who are, like, investigating it all the way through the movie. It's like fucking Ben Affleck's Daredevil.
I feel so bad for Al Madrigal in this. Because, again, he's trying his goddamnedest to be interesting.
And I like that guy.
I like him. I like him in this movie, and he is stuck in Morbius.
Yeah, because he's basically trying to do a sort of a Columbo vibe, where he's really friendly, but he's just obviously sussing information out of you anyway.
Oh, yeah, because you've basically got, like, Tyrese Gibson and Al Madrigal being, like, bad cop, schlub cop.
Yeah.
But he's so, like, personable when he's trying to, like, suss stuff out of you, and even when he's like, oh, I've got you dead to rights, he's just very nice about it. I'm like, this guy's great.
Yeah.
I like this
guy. I think the funniest thing that they make him do, which would have been a very believable moment, is when he walks into Martine's apartment, because they're looking to question her, and she's not around. She's in a safe house that Morbius has.
Yeah.
He tries to summon her cat after seeing cat paraphernalia to see if she, when she blew out of there, if she took her cat with her.
Yeah.
And how does he do this? He picks up the cat's litter box and shakes it around while saying, here, kitty, kitty, kitty. Like, what, did you not have a bowl of cat food on set that day? You think the cat's going to be drawn to the sound of you shaking its shit around? That is not going to work.
Yeah, that was a very wild choice when I saw that. I was like, that makes no sense And also, why does that litter box have, like, one small scoop of litter in it just enough to shake around?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It looks silly. I gotta feel like he thought that was silly too. He was like, can I just get, like, cat food that I could pour into a bowl? I feel like, or like a can
someone,
I can,
like,
open.
Go to a grocery store and just get me a bag of treats.
Yeah,
just shake that.
Just
anything,
bag of treats, something. And they're like, nope, can't do that. You gotta shake this thing of litter that was already came with the apartment.
We get a what in a better movie would have been a great horror scene of Morbius taking out these goons.
Yeah.
And in this movie is just, all right, some CGI smoke flies around while guys go, ah!
Yeah, this is our chance to talk about what Morbius looks like and behaves like when he is in his anti-heroic persona. Because in this movie, he can change back and forth.
Yeah, there is a full shape shift that goes on between being normal and then using your vampire powers, which cause you to lose mass in your face. You get like sort of an anti-Hulk thing where you get like thinner.
Yeah, he's basically Buffy with a budget.
Yeah.
You know, like, because on Buffy, they're always like, ha, and they have a terrible mask prosthetic on. And in this case, it's like his cheekbones get more hollow because they're CGIing them away from him. They're,
exactly.
They're putting him in Dallas Buyers Club mode. I think, obviously, they added this whole, like, he shapeshifts when he's vampire mode so that they could have Jared Leto's pretty face in the movie more, you know, as opposed to having him get turned into Morbius and being stuck like that, like Morbius in the comics is.
Yeah. I mean, they're like, oh, who are our two guys that are going to be vampires? Jared Leto and Matt Smith. All right, we can't have them be vampires all the time. We got two people that the internet loves to be like, ooh, pretty boys.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how terrible the track record has been for people who have played Doctor Who in Marvel movies or in Marvel stuff so far? There have been like, what, three of them, and only one has been anything good.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of any more. Like, there's one in a DC movie, and that one, it's okay. He gets splattered, and it's fine.
Ah.
But, because that's what, what's his name? Capaldi is in The Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you get Eccleston as the completely forgettable Malekith the Dark Elf in fucking Thor 2.
Yep.
And David Tennant as Purple Man.
Who's great.
Who's fucking fantastic, because they knew what to do with him.
Exactly.
And then this garbage.
God damn it. The...
I'm just saying, Nkuti Gatwa, stay away from Marvel. When they call, just don't pick up. Well, you pick up if it's Marvel. Don't pick up if it's Sony.
Yeah. They're like, hey, we are calling representing a Marvel property. And you're like, I can suss out bullshit. Get out of here.
I can't remember the lady Doctor Who, Jodie something or other.
Whittaker.
Jodie Whittaker. Also, say yes to Marvel. You were great, so say yes to Marvel. Not to Sony. Ask if it's Sony. They have to tell you if it's Sony.
You're legally required to tell me if you're Sony.
Yeah, that's the mistake that like Sidney Sweeney and shit made. Was like, they were like, oh, I'm going to be in a Marvel movie. I got to call Tom Holland and let him know that we're going to be pals. And then she calls him and he's like, no.
Oh, dear.
Oh, goodness.
Girly?
Oh, goodness, no. No.
Oh, lose my number.
And the whole time she's just going, oh, God.
So during this kerfuffle of him murdering all these guys, Martine slips and knocks her head against a piece of equipment. So she gets knocked out and he murders everyone else.
Yeah.
Morbius then calls in a Mayday and fucks off.
Mm-hmm.
Just jumps off the boat and swims to shore.
Yes.
We find out that he can subsist on his fake blood that he has created.
Mm-hmm.
But we also learn, like, oh, at first it was fine, and it's slowly starting to lose the ability to sustain him. So he's like, oh, at first it would be like, I would have to drink a bag of this, like, every 12 hours. And now it's down to 8 hours.
Yes. And by the end of the movie, it's down to 4 hours and 20 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, he's like, in a few weeks, I just won't be able to use this.
Yes. And so he's racing to try and solve the cure for himself. He's in the lab trying to figure out what the hell he can do when Milo comes in to visit him. And he's like, God, what the fuck happened? Where's Martine's in the hospital? All the mercenaries on that ship are dead. What's
also,
going on?
You're fucking jacked now.
Yeah. And you're walking around all fine. So you must have done it. And he's like, no. Which is funny is it's got the standard idiot plot at this point where
it's a curse.
It's a curse. I can't do it to you. Instead of saying things like, I am forced to drink blood to stay alive and I keep turning into a feral vampire and losing my memory.
Yeah.
He's just like, you can't. It's a curse.
Oh, you don't want this. This will not cure you in the way you think it will. And I'm like, dude, this is a guy that you've apparently been like brothers with for 25 years. Just go, hey, man, this turned me into a vampire and you cannot deal with that.
It's funny, the movie does acknowledge vampires. Like, not only is the boat that they go out onto and have the big fight scene on it called the FW Murnau.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, you get a little reference to Nosferatu. But also, there's a point where Martine tries to trick Morbius into putting his hand in sunlight to see what will happen. And he just takes it. He's like, yeah, I'm not that kind of vampire.
Yeah.
So we know they're vampires, but he's still doing the idiot plot thing where he's like, it's made of me a beast. You're like, you just say it made you a vampire. If you know what they are and you're very clearly one, you can use the terminology.
Yeah. Like, you have vampire bats, so clearly the idea of vampires exists in this world.
Yes.
Come on, man.
Oh, that'd be hilarious in a world where everyone can't call them, they have to call them suckers or something, you know, like one of those movies.
Yeah.
Where if they were like, well, what do you call those bats that drink blood? Oh, we call them sucker bats.
Them sucker bats. I'm going to get you, sucker bat.
Oh, what about that British airplane that existed in the 1940s that was the Gloucester Vampire? Yeah, it's called the Gloucester rocket ship now.
It's the Gloucester Fangy Boy.
Fangy Boy, which is how they tried to sell this movie. They were like, we've got a couple of sexy fangy boys.
Little fangy boys.
Except they're going to keep turning into stupid-looking monsters, especially Matt Smith.
God.
Oh, by the way, when he gets mad and storms off because Michael won't just give him the cure, he obviously palms a vial of the serum and just gives himself the disease.
However, what's great about that is when Morbius comes back into his office after, you know, having given himself vampirism, and he starts doing all of these experiments where he's like, oh, and now I've got echolocation and bats love me. He drops two vials.
I know.
He has two vials that he puts in a little thing, and he's like, these are the two vials of cure that I still have. When Matt Smith storms off, there are clearly two vials.
Yeah, because they do
still
a close up
there.
Again.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, you fucked up. You very clearly showed me that he did not take one of these.
The movie keeps going out of its way to stop you from inferring that this would be an interesting movie. It's like, hey, it could easily be that he palmed one of those two vials we made a big deal about showing you earlier in the movie. Oh, he didn't? Okay, great. So it's going to have a find a vampire thing the other way. No, he's just going to be a vampire the next time he shows up.
Yeah, he's just, the next scene is going to be a nurse gets horror movie stalked and then killed. And you're like, yeah, but you didn't show Morbius do it. Obviously, Matt Smith has done it.
Yeah.
But.
And Morbius thinks he did it because he's like, well, I must have blacked out and lost my memory.
Yeah.
What am I becoming?
The bloodlust must have overcome me.
Yeah.
And that is when our two FBI agents show up. And they're like, oh, okay, well, you know, some shit's going down. And, you know, this doctor that you worked with was on this boat where people died. And now a nurse that you work with is dead. We're going to need to question you. And it's just at that point he hears using his fun bat ears, which, by the way, the CGI for him using echolocation is he gets wrinkly ears.
He gets wrinkly ears and everything gets real smoky.
The everything gets real smoky is just this movie's shorthand for vampire stuff is happening.
Yes, it's everything. If it's him going around at super speed, it's the color, the smoke is the color of his clothes.
Uh-huh.
And if it's him using his echolocation or noticing wind that he could use to glide around on, it's everything just gets all white smoky.
Yeah, it's just, oh, the smoke of whatever the color everything around him is floats around.
Yeah.
So it's just smoky after effects.
It's also amusing that he figures out how to fly by using his bat radar to sense incoming air currents and so on, and realizing that for some reason they shove him around now. They never explain, like, did he get a lot lighter? Is that what's happening? He weighs like 30 pounds now. What happened? Is he like on the moon gravity?
It's never explained.
They just don't bother. They just go, wind affects him more than most people, I guess. That's one of his powers.
Yeah, because he, in this scene, getting away from the FBI agents, like, jumps around, does a bunch of vampire shit, gets onto the roof.
And almost gets blown off the roof.
Yeah, the wind is blowing. He's like, whoa.
Yeah,
whoa.
But that isn't how he escapes. He doesn't realize he can fly.
Well, he doesn't escape. He gets arrested.
Yeah, he gets arrested and gets confronted by those two who are asking him questions and pointing out that they're glad he killed those mercenaries.
Yeah.
They just don't want him killing nurses. That's different.
Yeah, he's like, oh, that lady was a single mom of two. That's fucked up.
Yeah.
All of these mercenaries, however, fuck them. I didn't look into their background and I couldn't care less.
Genuinely don't care about that. But yeah, he won't figure out he can fly until later when he's running away from Milo and has to escape in front of a subway.
Yeah.
So yeah, he gets confronted by the two of them and they're like, did you kill this nurse with vampire powers? And he goes, I can't answer that question. Instead of no.
Or even maybe. They fucking...
Something worse happens. They have to go.
Al comes in. And they go to question him in prison, and he brings holy water with him, and, like, fucking Tyrese is like, holy water? And he's like, hell yeah, I'm not taking any chances. This dude's a fucking vampire. How do I know he is a vampire? Because the victims are drained of blood, and I'm more worried that he is a vampire than he is some sort of weird serial killer.
They have fang holes on their necks, and they're drained of blood. It's a word I just learned. It's called exsanguinated.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got some triple blessed holy water here. Whatever. But anyway, yeah, at one point they have to leave. The two of them have to leave, and then Matt Smith comes in at pretending to be his lawyer. And he's still using the canes, but this is our big scene in the movie where we reveal that he has the vampire power. So after he...
Yeah, we get our usual suspects, Kaiser Soze scene.
So after he finishes talking to Morbius, who he's not going to actually help, he leaves. And then as he goes through a series of prison gates, he gets increasingly less crippled and able to walk.
Yeah, and he's drinking from a flask, and you're like, oh, there's blood in that flask.
Mm-hmm.
And he dropped off a little blood bag for Morbius.
Yes, so he could escape of his own power, which he does.
Because the entire thrust of Milo's villain arc is, I love being a murderer vampire, and I want my friend to love being a murderer vampire too.
Yes.
His whole deal is like, you need to embrace being a vampire, and you need to embrace killing people, and I'm going to ruin your life until you do.
Yeah. And I wanted Morbius at some point to be like, could you knock it off? We've all read Interview with the Vampire and the Vampire Lestat. This is played the fuck out.
Here's the thing. And I'm going to say this. This movie would have been, I'm not going to say way better, but probably much better if instead of, ooh, a dark mirror, Milo didn't get the cure and was a villain because he was angry that he didn't share it. And you had sort of a Lex Luthor Superman thing of like, oh, here's a guy with a lot of power who's very smart but doesn't have superpowers against a guy with superpowers, and he just hates him for a specific reason. That would have been more compelling. It would have been more into their, like, dynamic. But instead, it's just, nah, we need these two to have a CGI fight at the end.
I gotta say, I find your arguments to be unbreakable.
I mean, that's just... It's just Lex Luthor and Superman.
I know. With the difference being that at least the Bruce Willis character in Unbreakable is not also an unstoppable super genius like Superman is, which makes the whole Lex Luthor thing always seem funny. Where he's like, I have all the brains in the world, and he has all the brawn and all the brains as well. When he built an army of invincible robots? This is fucking stupid. I hate being his villain. I hate it. I'm going into real estate.
The idea of being like, oh, Matt Smith is just a villain because let's go ahead and say he is a criminal boss.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, oh, I need to go to war with fucking Morbius to be like, give me the cure. And if you won't give it to me, like, willingly, I will ruin your life until you do.
Yes,
like,
that would have been fine. I would have been okay with that. You're not wrong. What I would have preferred to see rather than the Dark Mirror is Milo's arc being, oh, I'll do all the other vampire things. So while you're jumping around and able to drink blood and fly, I'm going to be like, oh, I'm creating an army of guys like me, and I'm using mesmerism, and I'm shape-changing. He basically just picks up a bunch of other vampire traits, so it's not quite a Dark Mirror, but it's close. I especially wanted the army of more vampires.
Nah, that sucks.
Especially because after this, every fight scene in this movie is Milo versus Morbius, over and over and over again.
Yes, because there is no other real threat for any of them.
Yes.
Because every time Morbius gets into a fight, they're like, I have a gun and I shoot at you. He's like, I can dodge bullets and I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Also, I learn how to fly eventually after breaking out of prison, and I can just sort of throw people around. I can fall like 50 stories and be like, oh, that didn't hurt.
Yeah.
It just fully doesn't give a fuck about anything. So the other vampire is the only threat to him.
Now, where did you watch this? I watched this on Amazon, and my favorite thing was the description of it when you were clicking through that said, an experiment leaves Michael Morbius with spider-like powers.
That's hilarious. No, I watched it on Disney Plus.
Oh, is it free there? Fuck.
Yes, it is.
I should have checked.
Ah, you paid money, you idiot.
I know. But I do own Morbius now. You know, in case I want to watch.
You idiot.
Hey, Morbius value can only go up from here, baby. We're going to the moon.
I'm investing in Morbcoin.
Morb Bath and Beyond is going to take off any day now.
So this essentially leads us to the movie of them going back and forth, kind of fighting each other, and then Milo goes off and does some villain shit, and then Morbius is like, hey, stop that. No, please join me. We fight a little. We leave.
They keep confronting each other over what they are, because as Morbius escapes from prison, he realizes that Milo... He uses his super hearing to notice that Milo is eating a newspaper seller guy, and he confronts him, and he's like, what the fuck are you doing? Why did you do this to yourself? I told you it was a curse. And he's like, it's not a curse. I have never particularly cared for these people, and now's my chance to take something back away from them. I feel better than ever. How could you possibly think this is a curse? I'm going to go murder people.
Yeah. is just like, oh, apparently you didn't know this in knowing me for 25 years, but I'm actually a fucking murderer and would have done this earlier had I the means.
Yes. Eventually, it leads around to him confronting and killing his old doctor, Jared Harris, who susses out what he is immediately, but not quite killing him, making it so he'll die right after he gives a message to Morbius.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to give you wounds that last exactly Morbius amounts of time.
Yes, and the message is boring. It's just like, tell him I'll kill whoever I want and however often I would like.
It's, oh, tell him that we are the few against the many, that's their dumb catchphrase.
Their message is that they're Spartans, because they're the few against the many, and the rest of the world is against these two boys with blood diseases. But that's not the message he leaves with Harris. With Harris, he leaves him, just tell him I'll keep doing this and I'll do anything I want. It's Martine. He gives him the message of, tell him this for me.
Yeah.
Tell him we're the few and the many, or a few against the many.
Yeah, it's dumb. It's
stupid, yeah.
We get a...
No, man, because remember the whole story in the hot game, in the whole 300 story where there was that one dude who had any kind of physical deformity who was like, let me join. And they were like, no. So how
we're exactly like them.
We're exactly like the guys who did not get rejected. We got in, baby.
It is a weird, stupid thing.
What's it? FELTs or whatever. Yeah.
And we get a point where Michael eventually is like, all right, in a very stupid scene, takes over a counterfeiting lab and turns it into a medical lab,
mm-hmm.
and uses that to synthesize an antibody that is deadly to humans and to bats. And I'm like, that is a lot of things that are deadly to humans and to bats. Are you just going to inject him with poison? What are you talking about?
I did love that he was like, this one's both deadly to humans and to bats. And I'm like, so it's like arsenic or something? I feel like you don't really need to try all that hard.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, you could just, I don't know, inject air into the heart of either of them and they'd just die.
You could just stand on a bat. They're inherently quite fragile.
Like, I think you need to go into this slightly more. And he's like, nah, it's an antibody.
It's
and it is a regular ass antibody that is just like, oh, this is, I guess, some sort of coagulant thing, mm-hmm. and it's bad for people and bats. Anyway,
I think my favorite thing about it, though, is that Martine sees him when he's putting it into an injector thing, and she's like, wait, why do you have two of them, though? And, you know, they're both, they don't even need to say it, but he's like, yeah, I'm gonna kill myself with it afterwards, because, like, I'm a monster,
like,
and it's getting closer
for me.
But I just want him to be like, because I might miss, I'm fighting a super vampire,
you know, maybe he breaks a vial, it is in glass.
A redundancy feels very reasonable to me. This guy can dodge bullets.
So
that's why they call him Boris the Bullet Dodger Avi.
Milo then kidnaps Martine and slashes her throat and is like, hey, call out to Michael so he comes over here.
Yeah.
And
she's like rejecting him. She's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And it doesn't matter because Michael already hears that.
Yeah, he already hears it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But she eventually is like, Michael, And then when he shows up, she's like, hey, don't let me die in vain. Drink my blood so you can get all jacked up, because they get extra super powerful right after drinking blood.
Yes. And thanks to the fact that the artificial blood is blue, we get a nice shorthand where Michael has been drinking the blue, but Milo wants him to drink the red.
Yeah.
So that's a thing we're going to hear a lot of throughout the film.
It's a shame that the fake wasn't white so that you could have the white and the red. Be like, oh, try the white. It's chilled.
Try this white, and also thank the founders for it.
So he drinks Martine's blood, and also we very clearly show that a drop of his blood gets into her mouth and she swallows it. And you're like, yeah, okay, I get that.
Yeah, we got an extra all vampire. Right. I never thought Morbius could make vampires. I thought it was,
he can't.
He doesn't normally have that power.
Yeah, that's a thing that doesn't exist for him.
Yeah.
But it does now, because who gives a fuck? Because the last 15 minutes of this movie is horseshit that's thrown against a wall.
Yes.
He has a CGI fight against Milo to end this movie that is just two smoke clouds hitting each other.
It's very similar to the Venom fights from the first Venom movie, actually, insofar as it's just a bunch of CGI nonsense rapidly whipping through the environment and knocking shit over. And then occasionally they'll super slow-mo it and you'll see the two of them kind of going, ah, swinging at each other in a cloud of smoke.
Yeah, they're
and
like,
it looks
let's
really
slow it
bad.
Down so you can tell what's happening. And
yes.
You're like, oh, I don't, you shouldn't have done that.
It's identical to the Venom fight where they did the same thing. It was just like they get gooped up and then a bunch of goop goes flying around. And then every once in a while they'll slow-mo and show you that actually Tom Hardy is in there fighting. fighting Riz Ahmed. Look, there they are. Ah, I hate you. Ah, I hate you too. Okay, yeah. Back to super speed.
No, it is fully exactly like that. It's just this is the smoke version instead of the goop version.
Yeah, it's just swapped out smoke for goop. And then, you know, Madam Webb's had the smarts to switch it out for nothing but psychic images and ambulance hits.
You know, and some fireworks.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what they use for this in the Kraven movie.
I do enjoy
Trails of Animal Fur.
That there is a point in this where Milo gets hit by letters from a falling sign, and I was like, I hope that this continues and, like, Kraven beats a guy with letters from a different sign.
Yeah, I was sitting there being like, all right, what were the two letters that fell on what's-his-face?
M and O.
It was in this movie, it's M and O.
And it was a P.
And an S in the other movie. It was a flashback S and
mops
a real P.
So far.
So we have mops. I'm like, are they spelling something?
Yeah.
Are the falling letters from neon signs a thing in the Sony Cinematic Universe?
It is all I wanted in life is for them to put out like five flop movies and then it just spells like Ovaltine when you get it at the end. Just, God damn it.
Yeah. If one of the villains, I assume Craven's dad from Kraven, is taken out by a falling neon sign, please let it spell out the rest of a word.
Come on. Now, Milo gets the better of him because he uses his big vampire claws to slash Morbius in the tummy.
Mm-hmm.
So Morbius is very hurt, and he will now use this opportunity to use the one power that he has that Milo has not developed. You see, Michael Morbius has a special relation to bats.
Yeah. Also, technically, we never see Lucian Crown fly.
No,
I don't think he picks that up either.
We also don't get him using echolocation, really. Yeah.
Instead,
it's basically, Milo just went, I have super strength, and that's all I give a fuck about.
In fact, the only power we know that Matt Smith has that we don't think that Morbius has is the one scene that you probably remember from watching clips of this movie that we haven't mentioned yet, which is him doing a sexy little dance.
He does a little dance.
Yeah, he puts his shirt on to a sexy little dance.
Which I can't really fault, because I'm like, if I've been sick and unable to barely walk around and suddenly I'm a super sexy muscle man, I'd be like, fuck yeah, I'll do a little dance.
Yeah,
fuck you.
No problem. It's definitely Smith owning the material. I'm not complaining about it. That's his other power.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, he has yet to pick up, as far as we can tell, echolocation or flight or the ability to telekinetically turn bats into pile driving super arms.
First he summons bats.
Yes.
You know, the thousands of bats that live in New York.
Well, they lived in his fish tank for bats. Remember, he has a fish tank for bats, like a fish tank for bats?
Yeah, they can't come out of that. And also, there are like 100 in there, and he summons thousands of bats.
Yeah, but I thought the fish tank for bats got broken at one point in the movie, so they're just around New York somewhere skeletonizing cows.
Nope, they're still in there. Nothing breaks that fucking cylinder.
No, okay. I thought it had broken, but sure, he just summons a bunch of New York vampire bats then.
You know,
or just bats. It might just be bats.
He just summons the standard allotment of thousands of bats that mm-hmm. are currently near and around New York.
Yeah.
That can get there within 15 to 20 seconds.
Yes. So about a million bats come bursting through the ceiling and surrounding him in the same scene you always see in Batman movies where they're like, we're going to give him a more direct connection to bats, even though it doesn't make any fucking sense.
His whole point is he's like, I'm afraid of bats. And he's like, no, I'm not. I love bats and I'm surrounded by bats.
Watch his bats lift me out of this cave. What are you talking about? No, they don't.
And he gets swirled around with bats. And when Matt Smith runs and dives at him, like, picks up some rebar, because obviously they're fighting in a fucking construction site because it's a superhero film.
Yeah.
Picks up a spear and leaps at him to go stab him. Morbius shoots a bat Hadouken at him.
Uh-huh.
And knocks him to the ground with the force of his bat Hadouken.
Hey, bat Hadoukens are established vampire tradition as of Dimitri in Darkstalkers. Thank you. We also know he can do a dragon uppercut and probably teleport up into the air and then come down in a diagonal drill kick.
Probably.
Those are his special powers. All vampires.
Well, this is a living vampire.
Oh, yeah. All living vampires.
Are you saying Dimitri is a living vampire?
I mean, Darkstalkers hasn't had a new installment for like 30 years, but I feel like he's probably in a holding pattern vampire. Yes.
So, thousands of bats hit Matt Smith to the point where he can't stand up, because even though we have established that he is supernaturally strong and powerful and can fall from the top of a building and go, ha ha, that was fun.
Or punch a wall out. He does that at one point.
Yeah. We see Morbius when he first gets turned into a vampire, punch a steel, like, turned door off its hinges.
Effectively, they both develop very similar to spider-like powers.
And the, again, incredibly lightweight bats slamming into him at normal bat speed are enough to, for him to go like, oh, and I can't get up.
They're lifting him up against a wall. Like, it literally just turns, he just grows a pair of telekinetically driven bat pile driver arms that he's using to manipulate the Milo around the room. Like one of Dimitri's famous specials. Except actually Dimitri's big special is to grab you and kiss you and turn you into a kid version of yourself, which he then chases and kills again.
Ah.
Or sometimes he turns you into a sexy lady, no matter who you are. Mm. He has some interesting powers. Yeah. Dimitri
can crack that egg.
Dimitri cracks eggs. Yeah, everyone knows it.
So then he goes up to fucking Matt Smith and stabs him with the antibody.
He's like, you can't kill me. We're brothers. What do you... Oh, you did, though.
Oh, it's probably because of all the murder. Incessant murder and being evil.
Yeah, and because I wouldn't just leave you alone. I feel like if I had just been like, fine, I'm going to go be an evil super vampire anywhere and do whatever I want, Morbius would have been like, eh, I'm not dealing with that.
Yeah, if he had been like, oh, I just got on a plane and, like, I don't know, flew to Europe.
I'm going
to
go find those Grecian bullies.
You probably would have just been like, oh, well, I guess he's gone and sat in your lab.
Yeah.
But nope, I'm an idiot and an asshole.
Yeah.
So he dies, and Morbius is like, eh, fuck killing myself. I'm cool now. I'm leaving.
I've decided, well, yeah. And we get the shot of Martine waking up.
Yeah, she does, you know, the beginning of Radioactive. She's just...
Yeah, so she wakes up, so we know she's still around. And then, yeah, Morbius is flying through the sky. And then, as he's flying through the sky, we see a giant purple crack open up in the sky.
Well, this is a, like, basically two mid-credit scenes.
Yes, there's two mid-credit. One of them is him flying with a bunch of bats in the sky as he's decided to become a hero that New York requires. And then that ends the movie. And then the first post-credits is again him flying through the sky, and we see a giant crack open behind him, a purple crack open in space. And this is a reference to the end of Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yep. And at that point, fucking Michael Keaton just appears in a prison cell. Although, we don't see him materialize, we just see a giant crack, and then it cuts to Michael Keaton in a cell going, well, I hope the food's better in this joint. You're like, what?
I like that he's so up to speed. He looks at himself in the mirror, and he's like, okay, well, that's still me. This is not the prison I was in. I don't know if he knows if he's in another universe or not. I think he just thinks he got teleported to another prison.
Yeah. He's just like, oh, all right, well, I guess I'm in a different prison. And then we get a, like, news thing of, like, oh, Adrian Toomes, a man appeared inside of a prison, is set to be released because there's no reason for him to be in there because he's from another universe.
We don't know who he is, and he just appeared in the prison, so he's probably going to get released. And then we cut to credits again. And then another opening credit sequence, or mid-credit sequence, where Morbius drives out in the middle to the middle of nowhere where there's a big billboard by a road and parks, and up comes fucking Vulture in his full Vulture robot suit from the first Spider-Man movie, which is hilariously huge. And this movie makes it sillier because they actually have him stop and land and stand with it on, which is like, how does he stand in that thing? That backpack's got to weigh thousands of pounds.
Yeah, that thing is like jet engine size on the back of him.
Yes, it's ridiculous. But he lands and he's just like, hey, yeah.
I don't know why I'm here. I think it has something to do with Spider-Man.
But I feel like you and I should get together because
guys like us
could make a lot of good things happen. And Morbius is like, yes, thank you for the opportunity.
The fact that Morbius, after all of this, is like, all right, I'm interested. And you're like, why?
What do you hope to accomplish with this dude in a robot suit?
You are like, oh, I'm a weird vampire, and I've considered ending my entire existence, but I guess I'll just do anti-hero stuff. And then a Vulture man shows up and is like, hey, we should get together and do some stuff. And you're like, yeah, all right.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Fuck it.
At least he doesn't... I had not seen this before, but I had heard that he had threatened, or he was like, you got to help me team up against Spider-Man. And Morbius is like, yeah, that makes sense. So instead, he doesn't say that. He just says, like, I think it has something to do with this kid, Spider-Man. But anyway, you and I should team up because we could do some good.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I like doing good. That makes perfect sense to me, Morbius.
Yeah. Which makes it really feel like, given that they have created all of these characters to be like, oh, we were villains and we're all just being anti-heroes.
Yeah.
And in some cases, just regular heroes. And I'm like, are you going to make a Sinister Six hero film without Spider-Man in it where they, I guess you go, here's six guys and they all get together and fight some bad villain?
There's precedent for that. They just wouldn't have called them, they would call themselves the Superior Foes.
I guess.
But it's, I mean, I think the Superior Foes are also still bad guys. They just do their best to avoid Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But like, especially because that's when it's currently the Superior Spider-Man. You really don't want to go up against that guy. He is much meaner than regular Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
But
that dude punched a guy's jaw clean off.
Yeah. But yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And even like, I've read recently that someone interviewed Michael Keaton about this scene. He's like,
yeah. He's like, I don't know why.
I don't know what this is. I don't know what the plan was. I just go where I'm told.
Yeah. I don't know why I was in this movie, but I was.
Yeah. They had food. I don't know, man. What do you want?
They were like, hey, man, do you want like a reasonable paycheck for 5 seconds of work? And he went, yeah, all right.
Yeah, sure.
Especially given that the vulture scene in the full costume, they do not show his face. That was fully just, they went, hey, can you speak into this microphone for 3 lines?
Yeah, yeah. You know that's not him. He was not on scene for that day.
No. They were like, we're going to put you in this prison outfit. You are going to be on screen for like 2 minutes. And then you're done for the day. And he's like, I love that. Yeah. I love everything about that.
I love how every one of these movies is ending with something where you know they will never follow up on it.
Yeah.
Where they're like, yeah, look at this. We got a scene at the very end of Madame Web where they show her like standing next to the three spider women after they get all their powers and everything. That'll never happen. None of those women are willing to be in this. Like, all, two of them so far have come out in public and been like, I'm never doing that again. That was some horse shit.
Oh, yeah. The fact that fucking
Dakota Johnson
was like, oh, this was bad and I should not have been in it and I don't know why I was. And then Sidney Sweeney was like, look, I was just getting a paycheck.
I'm just a professional actor, you guys.
I don't give a fuck about this movie. And you're like, God bless.
I love that that interview with Sidney Sweeney did not have her coming off looking as well as I think. Because if you isolate that part and ever be like, look, I just a paycheck, guys. It started with her saying, actors aren't as rich as you think, guys. I wasn't able to take, or wasn't even able to take off 6 months this year if I wanted to. And be like, yeah, no one should be able to do that. Everyone should be able to do that.
No one can.
Yeah, it's when you say it like that, it doesn't come off as sympathetic as you think it does.
Yeah. So that is fucking Morbius for you. Let's get into our bests and worsts.
Yeah, sure.
Jeff, what was the best part of Morbius?
Anytime he had to say things like, a Daily Bugle, please, my man. And then he'd look at the cover of the Daily Bugle and say things like, Rhino escapes local zoo heist. And you're like, hell yeah. They're making references to stuff in a really fun way, which normally they don't bother with in these movies.
Uh-huh.
That was literally the best thing. Otherwise, this movie is so boring.
Uh-huh.
What about you?
Oh, it's that part where he says it's Morbin time, and then he morbs all over those guys.
Yeah, he definitely morbs pretty hard. And then fucking Namor shows up and is like, do not morb it!
Fool. Morbius morbs as he pleases.
Morb.
No, the best thing in this, I would say, is I'm probably going to give it to
Matt Smith's sexy little dance.
No, I'm going to give it to fucking Al Madrigal.
Yeah, he's great.
Like, he is probably my favorite character in here.
Uh-huh.
The movie obviously forgets that he exists in the, you know, when it does its shitty finale, because apparently, also, Tyrese Gibson was supposed to be playing a character that actually is a comic book character, has a mechanical arm. They were references to the fact that he has a bionic arm, and then they cut all of those from the film.
What character is that? I would love to find out he was supposed to have been Misty Knight.
No, he was supposed to be Jax from Mortal Kombat.
Oh, Jax has two robot arms.
Yeah, well, he's only got one because we need his origin story.
Yeah.
The other one got saved by artificial blood.
Also, unfortunately, Mortal Kombat is normally associated with DC more. But if we found out that he was Misty Knight and that Al Madrigal was Colleen Wing, that'd be amazing.
Ah.
We're the Daughters of the Dragon, bitch.
What up? What is your least favorite part of Morbius?
My least farty part of Morbius.
The least farty part of Morbius.
It's definitely not all the parts where he's flying around and leaving huge smoke trails everywhere.
Yep, those are the fartiest parts.
Those are the most farty parts. Those are the farty Bartfasts. least favorite part of this movie. It's kind of just a thin soup of boring shit, but I feel like I'm just going to say that opening scene where he goes to get vampire bats and it's so stupid. We established that vampire bats aren't what they are in the regular world, and he has no escape plan from there, and he has no reason to be there, and nothing about that scene, everything is wrong.
Oh, it's very clearly a scene where you're like, What is this? Oh, it's a scene we filmed specifically for the trailer to be in the trailer.
Yeah.
And then it's still in the movie for some reason.
It's a scene designed to remind you of the scene where they're loading the Velociraptor into its enclosure at the in the Jurassic Park intro. We're like, we're scared of the scary thing that you never get a good shot, good close look at.
It's just, it's so weird.
Yeah, and you're like, why would you reference that? This is a movie that came out in 2020. You shouldn't reference a movie from 1994 that looked better.
Ah.
I wouldn't. Or 1993, I think. Yeah, anyway, what's your least favorite thing?
You know. Least favorite thing in this, it almost has to be the, God, everything in the last 15 minutes of this is so bad. So I was like, it's probably the Bat Hadouken, because that's fucking stupid and
it's
bad.
Stupid looking. It's not a Morbius power.
No, it looks stupid. It's bad in many different ways. And you're just like, why? Why did you need to do that?
Like, I feel like if you couldn't make a Morbius movie without giving him lots of extra powers, maybe reevaluate whether or not you need a Morbius movie that badly.
The thing is, I'm like, dude, you didn't need to. He could have just been Morbius.
Yeah, he could have just morbed.
None of this was required. The, like, three scenes where he uses the echolocation thing, which is a power that Morbius has.
Sure.
Is like, yeah, that didn't even need to be in there. None of this mattered.
Yeah, he can fly and he has echolocation. Those are correct. But his face shape-shifting thing is very much like a pie. You know, it's a little handover to actors to be like, yeah, you won't have to look like a monster for the rest of the movie. You can turn in and out of Morbius
form. This is your version of you get to take the mask off in the final scene so you can talk to someone.
Right. But again, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense where he's supposed to feel like he's got a super turbo curse, because eventually he's going to invent an artificial blood that works. And then he's like, well, great, now I'm eternally cursed to be a vampire when I would like to be, and it is convenient.
I mean, that, or you go, hey, if my artificial blood doesn't work and I can't create a new one, I'll just, because I've created artificial blood, use regular blood from people that donate normally.
Yeah, just get it from blood banks and stuff, and because it removes the whole essence of him being horribly cursed. Like, this Morbius is less scary than the one from the Spider-Man cartoon.
The one from the Spider-Man cartoon is fucking terrifying.
Legitimately terrifying.
Because he's got little sucker hands.
Yeah, he's got some vampire D hands going on where he's just like, yes, plasma. And you're like, that guy's creepy.
But, yeah, the thing is, I'm real torn between Bat Hadouken and the, I think some guys like us could get together and do some good, because that is so bad. It's so awful.
It's very bad. It's the end of the movie's basically like a compliment sandwich, except instead of a compliment, in the middle, it's boring.
Yeah.
It's bad, boring, bad.
Uh-huh. So let's go ahead and rate the movie. We are each going to give it a rating from 0 to 5 to give it a full rating out of 10. Jeff.
I feel bad doing a rating for this at all, because I don't remember what I gave Madam Web, and I feel like this was like roughly the same.
It is almost the same. I'm like, I feel like this is a better technically overall movie. It's just very much worse in the parts that are worse.
I feel like I'm gonna give it a 2. I feel like I gave Madam Web a 2, and I to me they're roughly equivalent. Like, Madam Web is definitely a worse plot and a stupider movie, but I found large stretches of it much more mind-bogglingly entertaining.
Yeah.
So
bad in that way where you're like, what? How?
Yeah. Oh, there was a sticker on my shirt. I was wondering. Okay, yeah. So 2.
All right. Yeah, I'll probably give this a 2 as well. It's mostly a bunch of very bog-standard shit that you've seen before. Nothing interesting or surprising. And then again, sandwiched in between, you're like, oh, the beginning and end of this are just so bad.
Yeah.
It's just awful.
And, you know, if you're like me and every time you you see an announcement that they're rebooting a big property, you kind of squint your eyes until they announce who's at the lead.
Yeah.
Because it's either going to be fucking Jared Leto or Zach Levi. And if it, or Levy. And if it's either one of them, you're like, could you see that recently that he was announced as the lead in Harold and the Purple Crate? That should be a kid in footy pajamas.
Yep. And yet, here we are.
What are we doing?
Well, we're trying to make money.
Yeah.
And we're bad at it.
With the highly bankable star of Zach, you know, the star of
Shazam 2.
Yeah. That movie made billions of people complain. So a 4 out of 10.
4 out of 10 for Morbius.
Do not morbid.
Morb. Thank you so much for joining us on our wonderful journey through the Sony flops in the spider land.
Yeah, now make John, but not me, watch Venom 2 because I've seen it.
Yeah, I'm going to make both of us watch it. You're going to have to watch it again.
It's so bad. I don't want to. At least it's really short. It's like sub 90 minutes.
Oh, yeah. They were like, look, we got to feature length film and stopped.
Yes.
So we will be back in another couple weeks with more movie mastery. If you want to suggest a movie to go onto our big list that we pull from, you can, of course, get onto our Discord, or you can find us on Twitter at System Mastery, or me personally, you can just message at Gurgle Spasm, spelled the way it sounds.
Yeah, and here's his phone number as well.
Spelled the way it sounds. Uh-huh. And we have, if you want to help the show, you can go over to patreon.com/systemmastery.
We'd love it.
Joining us at any level supports the show, helps us keep doing what we're doing, and it gives you bonus content and an ad-free version of the show. You get all the stuff that we do on a single RSS feed, and it is super convenient and great for you. And you get, as I said, bonus content depending on what you support us at. At the $10 a month level, you get everything we do, including our TV mastery, where we are starting a brand new season.
Oh, I'm excited.
And we are taking a deep dive into the world of WMAC Masters.
Which is something that 99% of you just responded to with a what?
And the other 1% went, oh, fuck! WMAC Masters, or the World Martial Arts Council Masters, is, in an elevator pitch, what if martial arts was professional wrestling, but also a video game?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they deliver on that elevator pitch.
They sure do.
Technically.
Mm-hmm.
So join us for that over at patreon.com/systemmastery at the $10 level. And if you can't support us financially, you can always support us with giving a rating or a review wherever you listen to your podcast so that other people that have money can find us.
We would sure appreciate it. So go ahead and leave us reviews or buy our books or whatever it is you're going to do.
Whatever you want to do.
Come hang out in our Discord.
Love it. It's a great place with fun people. And we're in there, and we'll occasionally say some dumb crap.
Yeah, we talk all the time.
So, thank you so much. We'll see you in 2 weeks. You all have a good one.
In the universe of Star Wall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Star Wall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjack's role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Star Wall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more.